You should not have a heavy meal before going to bed, and of course you should not drink too much before retiring, otherwise your rest will inevitably be disturbed, and getting up in the night may cause you to forget your astral traveling experiences. When you rest upon your bed, make sure that you are completely comfortable, not too hot and not too cold, and it is better if you sleep alone with your door locked, because if you are sleeping with your partner and there is restlessness during the night, you will be brought back from your astral journey with quite a shock, which will cause you to forget anything you have experienced. Decide where you are going to go. You may be going to your friend's house, in which case you will know the way, or you may be going to a different country. But supposing you are going to one special house or one special person, then visualize, 172, the house. Visualize how you would visit that house if you were going by car or walking. Solemnly affirm before you allow your body to sleep that your astral will go to the house and that when you awaken in the morning you will have a complete memory of all that happened. You should affirm that this will occur and you will remember. Repeat your affirmation 3 times, and then let yourself drift off to sleep thinking of all this as you do so. If you succeed, this is what will happen. You will feel your body getting heavy, you will feel your eyes becoming tired, and you will fall asleep in a perfectly ordinary, normal manner. But then as you fall asleep you will have an experience similar to going out of a dark room into a brilliantly lighted outdoors. At the time of the passing, your physical body will jerk slightly, and if the jerk does not awaken you in the physical body, your consciousness will expand and become clearer. You will experience a truly wonderful, a truly joyous feeling of exhilaration and freedom from bounds. You will feel as if you are sparkling and bubbling all over with vitality. It will occur to you after a time to wonder what it is all about, and then you will look about and you will see that you are attached to your physical body by a glowing, pulsating, blue-white cord, like a child being attached to its mother by the umbilical cord. With some horror and distaste you will look at the lump of clay which is your physical body resting there, perhaps in a contorted bunch of twisted limbs. You will feel horror that eventually you have to get back into that confining body. But the time is not yet. You gaze about you, looking at things from an unfamiliar and rise up and look closely at the ceiling or the walls, but then as you wander about the room you find that it is boring to be confined to such a small space. And you think of how to get out of the room. Well, it's no sooner thought of than done. You find that you are out projecting beyond the roof with no memory of how you got through, perhaps other bedrooms in your way. Now you are out, floating above the rooftop at the end of your blue-white cord. For moments you float there gently lifting as if on unseen currents. Perhaps you look down and identify your house and friends' houses, perhaps you watch some late car speeding along the highway. You are seeing your town or your district as if from a balloon, but the impression grows upon you that this is just a waste of time. You are doing this for another, 173, purpose. There is nothing to be gained by just lying looking down at a sleeping city. You think of the plans you have made, you think of the places you would like to visit. Where shall it be? Bulgaria, Buenos Aires, London, Berlin? Anywhere. Perhaps you will be content to go just to a friend's house to read a carefully prepared message so that you can repeat it back to him for his confirmation on the morrow. Immediately you think where you are going, and you think how to get there. Perhaps from Dublin in Ireland you decide you would like to visit New York. As you think of this your astral cord extends and extends, and you rise up and up far higher than the astronauts, or cosmonauts either, have reached. As you rise up you see the earth turning slowly beneath you, you see the ocean which from this height looks like a placid village pond, and then as you peer down you see your destination, New York. Here the time is 4 hours earlier, so people are not going to sleep yet. They have their city lights on and it provides an excellent beacon for you. You set your sights on New York City, and you fall down towards New York City almost with the speed of thought. As you get closer and closer, and the city becomes larger and larger, you can pick your actual desired destination. Perhaps it may be Manhattan, perhaps you want to look in on the crowds swarming out of Broadway theaters, perhaps you want to have a look round Radio City or float over the docks and see the great liners lying at their moorings. As you think about it, so you achieve it. In many great blocks of buildings you will see lights shining out, many of them are office buildings. Well, you can look around, see the cleaners at work and perhaps some high-priced shore executive at work too. But many of the lights will be apartment buildings. A caution here, do not intrude, do not force your way into the privacy of those apartments because you would not like people spying on you and perhaps chuckling a little maliciously at you, would you? Well, respect the privacy of these people, and you will be able to continue your astral travels without hindrance. Throughout the period of your travel, keep in your consciousness the thought that you will remember, you will remember, you will remember. Never lose sight of that thought, keep it tucked away somewhere so that all the time you are getting a jog that you must and will remember. With practice, 174, you will have no difficulty at all in remembering. First, when you are back in the body you will think that you had a dream, but if you allow yourself to visit the same place the night after you will realize that it is not a dream but actuality. So with confirmation you will find that it becomes easier and easier. But you are in the astral looking at New York City from the air. The night grows darker, down below policemen in their prowl cars wander in and out of back alleys, the city grows quieter, although New York is never quiet. Soon you find that there is a strange impression of unease, an impression that you are wanted. Soon you find there is a tingling coming to you along the silver cord. If you are wise and experienced you will immediately head home, in this case you left from Dublin, remember. If you are not experienced you will be reeled in unceremoniously like a fish reeled in by an eager angler. As you, being one of the wiser ones, allow yourself to return, you head straight up into the sky again so that, looking down you can see the darkness darker and darker over the United States and over Europe the light is beginning to come brighter. You find that over Dublin you have the first faint streaks of light coming over the edge of the world. So you allow yourself to go down and down, you see the roof of your house approaching and the first time or two you instinctively brace yourself for a hard landing. But, nothing happens, you go down straight through the roof without even being aware of it, and then you find yourself in your bedroom again floating a few feet above your slumbering physical body. You look down at it and you shudder once more at the thought of losing the freedom of moving with the speed of thought. However, nature will not be denied and you find that you are settling, settling, settling. Soon you are almost in contact with the body which seems to be shimmering and vibrating slowly, and then you become aware that you are vibrating much faster. You have the task of synchronizing your vibrations to those of the physical body, but this is largely an automatic matter, and then you find you are sinking back into the physical body. You will feel as though you are tightly encased in a cold, damp, rigid garment. It is a thoroughly unpleasant feeling first because there is an impression of being stifled and constricted, and it will make you shudder and wonder why on earth people have to have bodies. Then the answer will occur to you, well, of course, you have to be on earth. 175, you will still be keeping before you the thought that you have to remember everything, you have to remember everything. And you lower your astral further down so that it fits exactly into that cold, clammy body of yours. As it fits exactly there will be a sudden snap and a jerk, and an impression that you are sinking down through dark, woolly dust. You may sleep for a few moments, in which case the next thing you will one know is that daylight is upon you and you are opening and rubbing your eyes, and perhaps yawning as well. Very clear in your mind is the knowledge of all that you did in the night. Now is the time to write down everything you did, write it down immediately, using paper and pencil put at your bedside for that purpose. Do not be clever and feel that you can remember all because you will not for the first few times anyway. Instead, you will forget everything unless you take the elementary precaution of writing it all down before the returning day causes you to forget. So write it down and read it. And do that for your first half dozen astral trips around the world. All this so far has dealt with astral travel on the mundane plane, that is bumbling around the world, seeing the great libraries, the great art galleries, and the great cities of the world. Well, perhaps you want to visit the astral world beyond this, what the old scribes called purgatory and paradise. In that case remember that it is quite easy, Remember that in the ancient Hindu scriptures are very vivid descriptions of men traveling to the moon, to the sun, and to the stars, for when you are in the astral, difference in temperature and lack of a breathable atmosphere makes no difference to you, it does not inconvenience you at all. Unfortunately, people nowadays are just playing with rockets and a few silly things like that, forgetting that 10,000 years ago the Hindus were able to travel in space by astral projection. This is not fiction, this is fact, and if you can get anyone to translate Hindu scriptures for you, you will soon see that for yourself. If you want to visit friends in the astral, you will have to be specially trained, that is if your friends are highly evolved, because in the astral, that is in the higher planes of consciousness, an hour or two of earth time will be several thousand years of astral world time, because it all depends on the speed of thought, etc. It takes, as a crude illustration, a tenth of a second for thought to travel from a man's brain to wiggle his 176 big toe or turn a wrist. Well, in the astral planes it might take 10,000ths of a second. There is a different time system altogether. But you, when you do astral travel daily or nightly, will find that you are able to operate your mind more and more in the lighter planes, and thus you will not be limited by physical boundaries. To give you some idea of the difference in time cycles, let me say that we on this earth are now living in the age of Kali. The age of Kali in celestial years is equal to 1,200, but in human years it is 432,000 years. But beyond our earth system, beyond our whole system of time and dimensions, there is the creator of the universe system, which is quite a long time, one, in fact, in which 4,320,000 by 1,000 human years constitute just one day of super time. So before you can actually locate an evolved entity, you have to be sure of his place in a certain time sequence. All of which makes it clear that the backstreet medium really doesn't have a chance. But you want to get out of this world and into the astral world, well, tell yourself what you are going to do, and when you go to bed determine that you really are going to leave this world and go up and up into the astral. Picture yourself rising up beyond the earth and into space, and into another dimension altogether. First you will get out of your body at the end of your silver cord, and then you will find all your color values change. You will be aware of colors which previously had no place in your knowledge. You will see that foliage is of many different hues, more colors than you knew existed. But then you may be horrified to see that there are quite unimaginable creatures gibbering at you, making obscene gestures, making obscene invitations. But do not be disheartened or frightened, because here you are passing through the garbage of elementals, etc., just as in most cases to enter a great city by rail you, for some inexplicable reason, see all the backs of the slum houses first. There is nothing at all to be afraid of, no elemental or entity can hurt you in the slightest, provided that you are not afraid. If you are afraid, then you more or less attract these people. So the best thing is to carry on and realize quite fully that no one at all can hurt you unless you are afraid. Decide that you are not going to linger in this area of elementals, but carry on, to the land of the golden light. 177. Here you will one see such beautiful things that it is quite impossible to describe them in words relating to a three-dimensional world. Your experiences in the land of the golden light have to be experienced in person, not through the medium of the printed or the spoken word. As your proficiency increases with practice, you will be able to go to other worlds and to other planes, but remember, you cannot intrude upon the privacy of another. You cannot harm others through astral travel, because that is the crime of crimes. Here is a happy thought for you: in the land of the golden light you can only meet those with whom you are compatible. Here in fact you can meet your twin soul, for there are such things, as we shall see in our next chapter. 178. Chapter 10, The Works of Man. The old engineer smiled fondly down at the small figure resting on the bench. Straightening, he placed his hands to his aching back and rose stiffly to greet his visitor. "Nice of you to come and see me," said the engineer, affably. "I certainly have a problem here." Taking the visitor's arm, he led him over to the workbench. "There he is," he said, like a proud parent. "The latest model. Experimental still, you know, and there are some unexpected difficulties. I can't solve them. Too close to the subject, I suppose. Gently he picked up the little figure and rested it on the palm of one hand. The visitor glanced around. Quite a nice place you've got here, he commented. You seem to have some thriving colonies even though this lot is difficult. Not so thriving as you think, replied the engineer gloomily. Come and look at these. Cradling the small figure in his hands he led the way to a small blue-green sphere. There is a viewer there, have a look, tell me what you think. The visitor placed his eyes against the viewer and twisted some knobs. For long moments he watched, and then, with a sigh, pushed the viewer away. Truculent lot, aren't they? He asked. It seems to me that they are crazy. For long moments the engineer stood in silence, idly fingering the little figure in his hands. Crazy? He mused. Crazy? Why, yes, I suppose so. It seems to me that they have a remote control problem or something. They do not respond correctly to transmitted signals, nor do they return the correct information. I don't know what to do about it. Turning, he paced up and down, lost in deep thought, head bent in profound contemplation of the figure in his hands. At last he abruptly halted in front of his visitor and asked brusquely, "What would you do if you were in my position? The board is making difficulties over all the delay in getting them right. What would you do?" Without replying, the visitor turned and peered through it with intense concentration. Carefully he, 179, focused and refocused until he was quite satisfied, then for a long time he peered through the instrument. At last he turned to the impatiently waiting engineer and said, "You should send an observer down. Shouldn't be impossible. It is the only way to get the results, you know. We are too far away here, we can only guess and so far we have guessed wrongly. Nothing else for it. But, on second thoughts, why not call in a specialist efficiency expert?" The engineer shook his head doubtfully. "No," he replied. "The board would never stand for it, I don't think they would even cooperate with an outside specialist." Together, engineer and visitor strolled over to the workbench and sat down. "Here," said the engineer, picking a figure from a box, "is the newest model. Homo sapiens we call them, but they seem to have lost the sapiens for the moment." The visitor took the figure and examined it carefully. "Here is another," added the engineer as he took another little figure from a box on the other side of the bench. The visitor examined the second figure and compared it with the first. "Self-reproducing," remarked the engineer. "When they reach a certain age and they get together they reproduce. Actually each has just the same equipment as the other, but in more or less degree. We call one male and the other female. They work by remote control, but just now the control is faulty and we don't know why." The visitor pointed to another box. "What are those?" he asked. The engineer made a rueful face. "Oh. They are abnormal," he said. "They do not know truth from untruth, we call them pressmen. Dot. Yes, humans are a bit of a mess, all right. Quite an intricate mechanism which at the present time does not seem to be functioning as well as it should. We have to remember that in our solar system we are composed of compounds which are rather different from those existing in other universes, other galaxies, etc. Here everything that lives on our Earth, is composed of the same bricks. They're available in this solar system: hydrogen, water, and hydrates, ammonia, methane, and various other gases. We are really composed of bricks of carbon, 180, molecules and amino acids and nucleotides. From these simple compounds are built all the species of animals, plants, and minerals upon Earth. When that is built into human shape, the resulting mechanism is subject to magnetic impulses, which we call astrological impulses, and various rays. But let us go into the matter a little more deeply and see what we can find out. If you can get an illustration of a human body and you can see the spine and spinal nerves, you will be able to follow this more accurately. The human mechanism, the controller mechanism, that is actually composed of 9 control centers. The average occultist mentions only 7 because there are 7 upon the material, or mundane, plain. The old Chinese physicians visualized all the organs of the body as being controlled and supervised by little men, and here in this chapter you will see an illustration adapted from one which was originally drawn in China about 7,000 years ago. You can see the little men helping the passage of food down the throat, blowing wind into the lungs, stirring up all the chemicals in the liver, and controlling various sphincters. But this dealt with merely the animal part of the body, the flesh and organs. We want to go farther than that and deal with the parts which bring messages from the over-self and control the functions of the body. We have to remember that there is very much more to the human body than meets the casual eye. If we look at a pair of wires going, let us say, past our window on telegraph poles or similar, we cannot tell by looking at those wires if any current is flowing. To us they are just copper wires. But with suitable instruments one can detect whether there be or not current flowing, and we can also determine which way it is flowing. In the same way we can look at a body without necessarily being aware of the various centers of that body which are connected to equivalent portions of the over-self. As already stated, there are seven mundane centers which are called chakras. At the top of the head there is the one frequently referred to as the thousand-petaled lotus. The actual Sanskrit name is Sahasrara chakra. This is the relay, or center, which is nearest to the spiritual and thus the one which is the more easily deranged. Lower, we are looking at a body from the back, and we see the head, shoulders, and spine, etc., around about the neck. 181. Area is the Ajna chakra. This is the next important, and which is actually in contact with the over-self. This is the chakra of the mind, and remember that the mind is just as an electrical function in much the same way as you can receive a telephone message, and the earpiece is just a function of what is being said at the other end of the wire. Further down the spine we have the third chakra, this one is known as Vishuddha. This controls the action of the mouth. So if one has difficulty in speaking clearly it could be that this chakra is undisciplined or damaged. To digress for a moment, just imagine that you are walking along a street and you see a telephone man messing about in one of those manholes. As you stop to look, he gets hold of a great sheathed cable and tears the insulation off it. As the insulation is removed you see thousands of tiny wires, most of them color-coded. But anyway there are thousands of wires and you wonder how on earth anyone can sort such a mess. Well, the nerves inside your spine are like that. Certain nerves go down inside the spine and then branch away, so when you are thinking of chakras think of a telephone man with all those wires, and think also of little relays, or repeater stations which take an incoming signal from a distant station and amplify it, make it stronger, before sending it on to the next station in the line. Next of our relays is the Anahata chakra which controls feel and all that we touch. Below that there is the Manipura chakra. This one is known as the fire principle chakra, and there is no point in going more deeply into this particular chakra because it does not greatly concern us at this stage. Below that we have the sixth chakra, this time the Swadhisthana chakra. This one deals with the water principle. Further down we have the seventh, or earth principle chakra referred to in Sanskrit as the Muladhara. This one is the home of the Kundalini, and the Kundalini is actually the controlling, or life, force of humans. It is, let us say, the equivalent of the fire in the furnace which heats the water to raise the steam which turns the turbines to generate the electricity which lights the lamps, cools the refrigerator, etc., in civilization. Once the fire goes out the electricity dies through want of steam, and everything comes to a standstill. Many people who have been misinstructed, or worse, have been uninstructed, try to raise the Kundalini force by artificial, 182, means, because it is a fact that if one raises the Kundalini properly one can be very much more aware, very much more intelligent. But to raise it indiscriminately without having utter purity of thought is to do immense harm to oneself, and frequently to lead to madness. To raise the Kundalini without thought of the consequences can lead to a complete mental and physical breakdown. So unless you have a master who has been through it all and knows all about it, do not try to raise your own Kundalini. A master will not raise the Kundalini unless he is quite sure that it is for your good. Here it might be as well to add that people who run correspondence courses, etc., or offer to do small services for you for a small sum of money, do not have the power to safely supervise your development and raise your kundalini. They can do a lot of harm instead. But for a physical entity of the human type, that is, a person living on this world, can attain to cosmic consciousness, he or she has to have certain stirrings of the kundalini. Stirrings are somewhat different from actually raising the kundalini. If one is sexually overexcited and, let me say it, lustful, it can be a bad thing indeed, because if one has sex for the sake of sex only, sex without true love, that is, it can temporarily or permanently paralyze the correct flowing of the kundalini force. By permanently I mean during this lifetime, as long as the malpractice in sex continues. Each part of the body while upon the earth is strongly associated and connected to its astral counterpart by way of all these chakras. No doubt you have heard of people who have had a leg amputated, and who still apparently feel pains in the amputated leg, or rather in the space which the amputated leg would have filled. This is because the physical leg which now has been removed still has certain effects upon the astral leg which, of course, has not and cannot be removed. To refer again to astral travel, it is highly essential that we return to the physical body so that every part of the astral body fits into every part of the physical body, and so that astral and physical organs are completely compatible each with the other. The bodies must also be correctly synchronized according to the direction of current flow. Just as all current, all electricity, must be either positive or negative, just as current can flow in one direction and return in the opposite direction, so do humans have a flow of current. 183. The two wires of humans are known as the Ida and Pingala. Actually, of course, they are not wires but tubes in the human body. Ida is on the left side and Pingala is on the right side, and these two sources provide the energy necessary for the passive functioning of the kundalini. We can look upon them as caretakers, making sure that the kundalini is kept in good condition, ready for use in this life if we deserve it, or if not ready for use in the next life, because when the kundalini starts to rise under correct treatment and under correct control, Ida and Pingala are bypassed. But so long as man and woman are bound by the operation of Ida and Pingala, that man or woman will be confined to the earth plane, and to the theory and practice of birth, death, and rebirth. It is only when man is able to raise his kundalini and bypass the caretaking energy sources of Ida and Pingala that he can progress and know that his time of release from the cycle of birth, death, and rebirth has come to an end. It is better to regard these chakras as relay stations, or if you like, remote control spots. Remember, also, that there are other important parts of the body such as the cervical ganglion in the neck, and somewhat below it the vagus nerve. After that we have the cardiac plexus, the solar plexus, and the pelvic plexus, but these are substations and should not bother us unduly. We upon earth are affected very greatly by all sorts of outside influences. There are various rays which affect humans, and let me say at the outset that astrology is a very real thing indeed, and people should not sneer at it. One should only sneer at the practitioners who misrepresent astrology, because to do astrology properly takes a long time and entails a lot of work, so much time and so much work that it is not a commercial proposition. Certainly you cannot get anything of a worthwhile reading by looking at the columns of the daily newspaper and reading your horoscope. The rays are a form of offshoot of cosmic rays, and according to the time of the day and your own latitude and longitude you are subject to certain rays. How the rays affect you depends upon your astrological makeup. There are, for example, the orange, the yellow, green, blue, indigo, and others, but it will be far too much to go into the principle of these rays in a book of this nature. Let us say, though, that as one gets to the red end of the spectrum one finds that one is, 184, dealing with the development of individuality, and the purple is concerned with a group mind, while a green ray tends to give one an impetus to learning, the yellow ray itself is the ray of wisdom. One of the more interesting of the rays is the blue ray, which is supposed to come under the domination of Hermes. in ancient Egypt and Chaldea, it was known as the magician's ray. Of more use to us at the moment are the zodiac signs.